The conversation continues with James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello and welcome to the second hour of today's Freeman Report. It is Monday, the 29th of April, 2024. I'm your host, James Freeman. And if you've just joined me, WHO and the World Health Organization expert James Roguski just gave us an update on what is going on at the WHO at the moment regarding its pandemic accord treaty. James always surprises me with his knowledge about what's going on. But the thing, big revelation for me from that interview, and it wasn't, I think, a really important interview, was all of the things that we've been worried about have actually been smoke and mirrors. Whether medicines are going to be mandated, the human rights aspect from the document, all of these things, as according to James, were actually agreed that they wouldn't go ahead a year ago. And actually what this treaty is really about is international trade. It's actually about setting up the structures and infrastructure for billions more pounds to flow around the world. Well, billions and billions, trillions probably in the next decade, all on the back of more pandemics. So, you know, more testing, more genetic sequences, more vaccines, more medicines, all of the things which have been really bad for us. Now, we kind of know that, right? But everyone's been focused on, the WHO going to be able to mandate it. What James is saying is that's irrelevant. And I guess he's got a point, really, hasn't he? Because, there wasn't a WHO rule in place that it could have powers over governments, 4 years ago or 3 years ago when we saw mandates around the world. And yet mandates still came in. So maybe this is just leading us down the garden path, rather, and a big distraction, this whole thing about whether things are going to be mandated. Maybe James is right. And actually, it is the treaty itself, which is just an international trade agreement to start sharing the proceeds of all of these medicines which they want to push. Anyway, I am going to get James back on soon because I think his voice is incredibly important in this whole thing. We also got an update from Scottish politician Brian Monteith of the epic collapse of the political establishment in Scotland that is unfolding at the moment. Obviously, this morning we've heard the news that Hamza Youssef has resigned. Well, he hasn't resigned. He's announced that he's going to resign. There is a difference. We talked all about that. Of course, Hamza Youssef is that politician who stood up in the Scottish Parliament and complained about the fact that everybody in positions of power in Scotland is white, despite the fact that 96% of the country is indeed white. What a plonker, eh? Well, anyway, he's announced today that he's going to resign. When he's going to resign, we don't know yet. But this is a big deal in Scotland. So if you did miss the first hour and you want to watch it, it will be uploaded to the website in the next few hours. Just head over to tntradio.live or go to the app and click on the episodes button. And there you'll be able to watch and listen back to all of my previous shows. Okay, so for the next hour, we're going to be getting an update from Canada and the US. So in terms of the US, we're going to talk about those presidential election. There's some polls, interesting polls that have come out very, very recently. And then we're going to go over to Canada to ask how Justin Trudeau, that lovely politician, is getting on there. Now, the legacy press in terms of the US want us to believe that Trump is in trouble. I've seen lots of stories over the weekend in the UK's legacy press saying as much, that Trump is in trouble. And they're doing everything in their power to make this so. I've heard the term Sleepy Don as being used. And apparently that trended on X for a little bit of time. All because Trump closed his eyes for a moment in court. And this is despite the fact that he's being made to sit there all day long for the last 2 weeks. Now, I'm not being funny, but if I think I would start nodding off if I was subjected to that, having to sit in court all day long for a number of weeks. But the big question for me Is this impacting Trump in the polls? So we'll be talking all about that with my first guest. Then we'll be moving over to Canada and asking, will Trudeau still be Prime Minister come Canada's general election in October next year? I don't know, if I'm honest. He certainly is unpopular. His party is lagging in the polls. The Conservatives are quite a bit ahead. But then there's many things going on in Canada that surprise me much. For example, a Canadian town in the Gulf of St. Lawrence has become the first area of Canada in the country to officially require anybody entering or leaving the area to have a QR code. Yeah, that's right. To enter this part of Canada, you have to have a QR code. And if you haven't got one, you can be fined by the police or the local authorities. So there's that, along with the federal jab mandates for travel across the country. The mandates saying that you needed to get jabs or lose your jobs. And then, of course, the draconian emergency powers used by the Trudeau government to shut down peaceful protests and freeze the bank accounts of anybody donating money to the protesters. As I've said many times on this show before, Justin Trudeau, along with Jacinda Ardern, are two very dangerous, I think, and distinctly vile human beings who are very adept at twisting the truth and using people's virtues to turn communities against each other. They've proven that time and time again, both of those politicians. During the trucker protests, Trudeau called the protesters racists, misogynists, and claimed that they were being violent when in the truth was exactly the opposite was going on. I'll therefore be following events in Canada very closely over the next 18 months until that general election. And of course, I will also be doing my bit to help expose what is going on with Justin Trudeau. My guest this hour, our host of the US show Newsmax, Alison Maloney, and Canadian political commentator and media coordinator, Kat Canada. If you want to get in touch with me, please email me at jamesfreeman@tntradio.live. And if you want to join in the conversation, just head over to tntradio.live and click on the chat icon. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report for today's News Talk TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right, okay, over to our news correspondent for the UK, Gemma Cooper, for today's breaking news.
Hello there, James. Well, Hamza Youssef's impending resignation continues to dominate the headlines now, with furious speculation about who his successor will be, who will be the next leader of the Scottish National Party, who wants that role, who wants to clean up the mess. It's a fast-paced story. Obviously, the announcement that he intends to resign once the successor can be found, dominating all the headlines at the moment. Also, though, it's really bad news for borrowers here in the UK, as two more of the big banks and mortgage lenders have hiked up their rates today. There's also data out accompanying that, showing that mortgage repayments across the UK have increased by 70% for nearly everybody just since 2021. That's a lot of beleaguered borrowers having to find a lot of extra money every month at a time when things like essential food and services are costing more than ever. And also, farmers in the UK warning of further price hikes. Things like bread, potatoes, beer could all go quite up quite significantly due to the wet autumn, wet spring, wet and cold spring that we've had, which means that wheat, barley, oats and oilseed rape could all have fallen drastically. We could have lost 4 million tonnes of that crop by the end of this summer. So they're warning that price hikes could well go up. And of course, that comes on a day before new price charges are due to be introduced at UK ports on imports coming in from the EU, which also people are worrying about the fact that that cost might be passed on to the consumer also, or we may just see some more empty shelves in supermarkets. So a lot going on today in terms of politics and the economy. And it's only Monday, James, here in the UK on TNT.
It certainly is only Monday, isn't it? Is there any news? So he's announced his intention to resign. It's clear that he hasn't actually resigned yet. Has he talked at all about what to expect now, what the process is? how long that process is going to take?
Well, the process now is the Scottish Parliament's got 28 days to find a new leader. And that normally the responsibility of that goes to whoever's the kind of ruling party, which is the SNP. Everybody has to agree. There has to be a vote on that. And if the Scottish Parliament can't agree, if members of the Scottish Parliament can't agree to vote on who is the new leader, then a general election will be called. So it rather depends. I mean, there are quite a lot of names in the frame to see who will succeed Hamza. Let me just see if I can find some of my notes here. We've got, John Swinney, who's currently the, I think, deputy of the party. He said he's giving very considerable consideration to the prospects. He's been asked quite a lot, actually. He looks like the person in the main frame. Kate Forbes is another one. She stood in the leadership contest when Nicola Sturgeon stood down, and she went against Hamza Youssef, and she's in the frame as well. Who else is in the frame? Stephen Flynn is in the frame. He is the SNP's Westminster candidate, member of parliament, as it were. Neil Gray, he's a former journalist. He's a member of the SNP. He's the health secretary. And Jenny Gill-Ruth, she's quite young, actually. She's the education secretary. And Shona Robinson, who is the finance secretary. So there's quite a wide range of names there. They could have been pulled out possibly of a political journalist commentator hat as opposed to the actual members themselves. They haven't indicated massively strong indications just yet, but obviously everybody's still reeling from the fact that, you know, Friday, Hamza Youssef said, "I'm not going anywhere." Monday, "I'm going." You know, that was it's such a fast story, this one, as we discussed last week. It's a fast-paced story. But a mix of people, three men, three women from the SNP that could end up taking over, whether they'd want it. This is the question, isn't it? Who'd really want it at the moment? They talk about independence. Hamza Youssef, in his resignation or prior resignation speech, said how he felt that independence was frustratingly close. But from the outside looking in, it looks like the SNP can't run a bath, let alone their own party. So who wants this poison chalice at the moment? That would be a question, I think, on many people's lips.
Yeah, and I guess let the politics begin with all of this. My first guest on this morning, Brian Monteith, who's a Scottish politician himself. He's been an MSP and also an MEP. He writes for the Scotsman as well. He was saying that Kate Forbes would probably be the first choice for SNP MSPs. But the problem with her is, the Greens really don't like her. And because this is a minority government, obviously they're going to need coalition partners. So that's a problem, I think, for the SNP. John Swinney, he talked about as being probably then being the front leader for all of this. But this is where the horse trading starts, because it's not just a case of who the SNP want. They can't just put anyone up there if the other parties in the parliament don't want that person. So it's all in a bit of a mess, really. And I think the likelihood, although I did say I thought it would be unlikely last week, I think after speaking with Brian Monteith this morning, I think the likelihood of us getting an early election in Scotland is quite significant now. I really do think we could see an election this year in Scotland.
Oh, then you said, yeah, I remember you said you thought it was very unlikely. And I bow to your judgment most of the time when it comes to politics, because you're a former politician yourself. But it just goes to show, you know, politics is a bit like football. You just don't know. Well, it can go either way. And this has certainly gone one way and then it's gone the other way. It has to lead me back, though, to our little wager about David Cameron becoming the next leader of the Conservative Party. You're adamant that won't happen. No, I'm adamant it will. So.
Listen, when I talked about the SNP last week, I did put in a footnote in what I was saying, that, you know, I wasn't 100% sure. On the David Cameron thing, I am 100% sure. I there's just no way he is going to become Prime Minister of the UK again. Not a chance in hell. But Scottish politics, yeah, I mean, that's what I kind of thought, but it was just me thinking. I wouldn't have a wager on that with you, Gemma, but I stand behind the David Cameron wager we've got. He's not going to become Prime Minister of the UK again. Absolutely, it's not going to happen. Absolutely adamant.
Maybe the next leader again, then we'll see. We'll see. But anyway, we're digressing. We go back to Scotland, and this is the big story of the day. It's chaos. That's what people said last week, and that's what people are saying today. Absolute chaos within the Scottish Parliament. And I think, you know, feel for the Scottish people, really. They just want their country well governed, well run for the benefit of them, and not all this drama at the top, which is looking increasingly like a pantomime, James.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just finish on the fact that, I mean, Brian Monteith put it nicely. He just said, you know, that although Humza Yousaf kind of said that independence is quite close, it's actually nothing of the sort. I think this has put independence or a vote on independence to bed for a whole generation now. I think Scots are fed up with it, given all the damage that has gone on in Scotland, while the SNP has just been chasing the independence race. Right, Gemma, thank you very much for that. I look forward to speaking with you again tomorrow and to the rest of you. We're going to be talking about the US elections and Trump next. And then after that, we'll be talking about Justin Trudeau. So don't go anywhere. Stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Right. Now, we're obviously going to be talking a lot about the US this year with the presidential elections planned for later in the year. My next guest is host of Newsmax and Moodsmax in the US, and she is Alison Maloney. And welcome to the Freeman Report, Alison.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
So, Alison, loads going on in America at the moment, obviously, and must be very, very frustrating for Trump, sat in that courtroom all day long. But there's been some interesting polls, which I've seen come out in the past few days. And it's all about how Americans see the success of the presidency of Biden and Trump. And if you break it down, Biden, in terms of favorability, he gets around 73% from Democrats, 37% from independents, and just 8% from Republicans. No surprise there. But Trump gets 92% from his base, from Republicans, 51% approval from independents, and 24% from Democrats. So a real contrast there in terms of how the country see the two presidencies when you marry them up. So I guess my first question is, why is Biden holding up in the polls? It really does confuse me why he's not further behind in the polls.
Yeah. And so we always say take polls with a grain of salt, because if you really go in and you take a deep dive, you see, you know, who is asked. A lot of people actually don't like to answer truthfully with polls. They try and keep their opinions, you know, tight to the vest. And so obviously, if you look at the poll numbers, even compared to back in January with Biden and favorability, he has gone down. And so we're starting to see it. And if you look at how Trump goes up, And he's going up while he's in a courtroom. He spent nearly, it'll be 3 weeks this week, his time in a courtroom in New York instead of campaigning like President Biden, and his poll numbers keep going up. And so what Americans are concerned about, they're concerned about the economy, inflation, immigration, and those are all things that President Biden essentially refuses to talk about. He did for a while say the economy is good, just give it time, we're on the right track. But you can't look at your checking account and your savings account and believe what he's saying. So, and there are people in America who will vote for Biden because they simply do not like Trump. And even though we see everything going on, there is a dislike for Trump with a lot of Democrats, some Republicans, and even independents. And they say, you know what? We'd rather have a Biden in office than Trump. But that poll you mentioned, those independents, that's the key. Both parties want these independents. And when you see that as high as 51%, I think you said, that's huge for Trump because a lot of women and independents typically go more for Democrats. And so again, it's a short time to the election, but it's a very long time. So much can happen.
I think it's a very long time. I mean, yes, a short period in time, but I think, you know, with all that's going on in the world, with this proxy war with Russia and Ukraine, with what's going on in the Middle East, you know, I think there's a lot of distance between now and that election later in the year. One of the things that I've noticed with this Trump court case is a lot of the legacy press in the UK, they've been reporting, they've been jumping on the bandwagon and trying to report this is very negatively for Trump. So they're saying that this is damaging Trump, you know, and I think we saw the term sleepy Don trend for a little bit on X, obviously trying to copy and make fun of Trump for his use of sleepy Joe against Biden. How much do you think this trial is damaging Trump at all, if it is at all?
I don't think it is. I mean, again, there's certain networks and certain media outlets that people will watch, and that's what they're focusing on 24/7. They will analyze his body language in the courtroom. They will analyze everything. But on, I think it was this past Thursday in New York City, before he went to court, he went and met with a number of construction workers, handed out coffee and donuts to them. The amount of support that you see, especially from folks who are members of unions, and unions typically vote Democrat in the United States, the support he received before he's going into court, these are hardworking middle-class Americans who typically have said, we voted Democrat in the past. They don't care when he's in court because what they're seeing is what a lot of things that are happening to him that typically wouldn't happen to other people only because his name is Trump, and people are seeing through that. So I don't think that that will hurt him at all. And again, I think he finds ways to campaign and to connect with voters even while he's in the courtroom, which is pretty amazing. And as far as a marketing standpoint for him.
Yeah. And I know we've got to get this election out of the way, and obviously we've got another 4 years, but it's quite amazing and astonishing how Trump has dominated the Republican Party in recent years. Is there any talk yet at all about what the Republican Party does next? Because, of course, President Trump, he can only serve one more term, so another 4 years. So there's a big question in the party, I think, isn't there? Are there any candidates coming forward who could potentially replace Trump if he does win the presidency?
Yeah, I haven't heard any kind of behind the scenes talk, but you know that's happening. You know that's happening behind closed doors in Washington. There's a lot of younger people out there in Congress, in the Senate. I think a lot of people would love to see a woman. I mean, I'm a woman. I would love to see a woman as president. I think that we have had in the past, if you look at President Trump, Joe Biden, they're all a little older. And I think Americans want to see a younger person who could serve both terms, who could serve 8 years, who has a different type of energy. I think that's what a lot of Americans want. So there's a lot of people out there. I don't really know specifically who would be waiting in the wings, but I'm sure they're already planning for sure.
Yeah. And talking about age, let's talk about that speech that Biden gave where he called for 4 more years, didn't he? And there was a whole chant afterwards, clearly prepared, I think, where everyone chanted 4 more years. But it was interesting just before he went into that he was reading from the teleprompter, because he even read out where it said pause afterwards. There is a real problem, isn't there, with politics at the moment in America. I mean, you know, even if you support Trump, I mean, both of these men are old men. And, you know, that is a real problem, isn't it? Particularly for Joe Biden.
It is a problem. And a lot of people say it's not age. It's how you are in that specific age. Because if you were to look at somebody who is the same age as President Biden, they may, someone may be in a nursing home. Other people may be running a marathon. So it really is an age. It's your cognitive ability. And to go back to that teleprompter read, we actually did, we showed people on the morning show last week what a teleprompter looks like, because unless you're in TV, you don't really know what it means. But it says it's usually in a red or blue line that will say pause or take sound. It essentially, you know when to stop. And he's been reading teleprompters for 50 plus years. So when you see something like this happen, this isn't just a gaffe. This isn't going off script. This isn't just forgetting something. This is serious. And people like to joke about it. But if he does win, he will be in the office for 4 more years. And if you were even to look at video of him a year ago, a year and a half ago, and see the decline, it's not a matter of whether you want a Democrat or Republican in the office. It's a matter of who is the best person to do the job. And when somebody can't read a teleprompter, that's very scary. They're talking to foreign foreign policy. They're talking to world leaders. They're in charge of our nukes. I mean, they're waking up at 3 a.m. and making serious decisions. So this is a big deal. And unfortunately, we continue to see it every day when he's on the campaign trail.
Yeah, absolutely. Alison, we're going to take a short break now for the news headlines. When we come back, I want to talk about what you think are the biggest sort of policy issues for Americans at the moment. I'm hearing that it's immigration and the economy. I mean, it's usually the economy, right? But we'll talk all about that after this short break right here on TNT.
Check this out!
News Talk Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. After failing to convince Americans that Russia was meddling in US elections, Washington's now pointing the finger at China. Beijing is demanding an international investigation into the attack on Russia's Nord Stream pipelines. And Australia is sending another $100 million worth of military equipment to Ukraine, taking Canberra's total spend on the war so far to almost $1 billion.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Right now, Alison, like you said earlier, there is a it's a short distance in time until the election, but lots could happen. At the moment, I'm hearing that the economy and immigration are going to be the two big issues. What are your thoughts on that?
You're absolutely correct. The economy and immigration. And immigration, I think a year ago, people thought, oh, it was just going to be people in Texas and border states. But this is affecting everybody. We are reporting on people who are murdered, from people who are here illegally. There was a father who found his daughter under a mattress in Texas because somebody who came here illegally opened the door and attacked her. I mean, this is happening in every state. So this is a huge factor, as well as the amount of fentanyl that's coming in our country. So that's a big issue. And obviously the economy. I mean, this is affecting everybody. You know, we've talked to people and people have to decide, can I buy my child a birthday present? Or do I go to the grocery store? Because this is extremely serious. While the president says that that prices are going down, we don't see it. Inflation has gone down, but it's not where it was before he got in office. And this is serious. And this is how people vote. They vote when it comes to the economy. So those are the two big issues. Crime has gone up. And then obviously you have everything going on with what's going on at these college campuses with these pro-Hamas protesters. It just, a lot of people I talk to say they don't feel like they live in the United States anymore, that this is a different country.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about those protests. Obviously, a lot of them have been broken up now, quite heavily handedly by the police. What are your thoughts on them? I mean, because I guess when I was watching that, it made me, you know, America is the land of the free. It's literally written into your constitution, free speech. What are your thoughts on the police breaking those protests up?
Yeah, I mean, there is free speech, but then when you cross the line when you threaten someone. And a lot of these protesters have threatened students. They have threatened faculty. And so the police, like at Columbia, they had to be invited to go onto the campus. George Washington recently had protests. The college called the police to come in, and the police said, "We actually don't want to go. It's going to look worse. You guys handle it on campus." So there's some campuses that want police help. There's others who don't. A lot of these protesters say they're peaceful, and there are some peaceful protests. If you look at the video, however, they're not all peaceful. And when you are a Jewish student, you're now being forced to study from home and you're paying all that money. I think it was Columbia, don't quote me, but one of the colleges had to cancel graduation because of the fear of students and faculty. If you live in America, you should feel safe. And if you're Jewish, you don't feel safe, which is really sad.
And where would you say public opinion is on what is going on in Gaza at the moment? Obviously, a lot's happened. And you know, I think it goes without saying that what happened on the 7th of October, absolutely terrible. I don't think there's many decent people, human beings, that would argue against that. But when we've seen 34,000 civilians now killed, last week we had a UN report that they found evidence that potential torture and executions, 400 bodies being dug up by the hospital. Where would you say more generally public opinion is in America?
I think a lot of the opinion is nobody wants to see this happening. And what happened on the 7th, Americans feel and believe that Hamas went in and they conducted this attack. Babies were put in ovens, women and children were killed. Unfortunately, you know, as Israel says, we had to respond. You know, Israel had to respond. It's horrific. But I think that a lot of Americans just wanted to see it stop. They need to come to some sort of an agreement, and we don't want to see this happen. And it's obviously trickled into the United States. We see a hatred for Jews, and it shouldn't be like this. So it's a very challenging topic because not everybody is there to actually see what's happening on both sides.
Yeah. And I guess more importantly, how do you think the public see Biden's leadership or lack of it, whichever, across this? Because I think a lot of people reflect on Trump's presidency and see actually on the international stage anyway, he was a very, very strong president. We had the Abraham Accords, which were brought forward. North Korea, he sat down with their leader. He did a lot of good things, I think, Trump did. And that contrasts a lot with where Biden is. Is there much talk within the press in the US in terms of Biden's leadership and the impact that's having on the conflict?
Yes. So that's the other part of it. You talk about immigration and inflation in America, but also foreign policy. And they see President Biden as weak. They see former President Trump as strong. He really hasn't come out and taken a serious stance about what is happening. Something President Biden, you know, if I were to advise him, I would have said, go to one of these college campuses and talk to these students, but talk to both sides. You know, talk about how we need to lead by peace. Lead by conversation. Talk about things. This is how we get things done. No violence. Don't burn things. And so he needs to lead by strength and be the unifier that he said he was going to be. And Americans don't see him as that. And they don't see him as very strong on any stance. And that's the problem. And, you know, everyone wonders what other countries see America. What do we look like on the world stage?
Yeah. And do Americans worry at all about this conflict in Israel? Of course, the Israeli or the Jewish lobby is huge in America. A lot of influence over US politicians there. Are Americans worried at all that Israel is dragging the US potentially into a world war?
I think Americans are concerned about that. They're concerned about Ukraine. They're concerned about what's happening in their own country. And when you don't have a leader who's strong and can have strong conversations with other leaders, we worry about what is happening, what's happening or what is not happening behind the scenes, because you elect somebody and officials to trust them to make the right decisions on behalf of the American people. And I think Americans feel like we are just kind of swimming in this whirlpool and there's no way to get out. So I think there's a lot of concern. Obviously, companies, there's Google, there's other companies who are not for these protests. They have been firing people who have been taking part in it. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the business world as well as the political world. And there's a lot of implications of what's happening right now. A lot of uncertainty.
Yeah, exactly. And putting aside, though, the, you know, I've had other guests on that have talked about attacks against Jewish people. Obviously, there's already laws in America to deal with violence and that kind of thing. But given what we've just said and the risk that America is being dragged into this war and the protests at the face value anyway seem to be calling for a ceasefire, is there not, you know, is there not justification for letting these protests go ahead, given the fact the risk that this conflict poses to the United States?
Yeah, I think, you know, again, everybody has the right to protest. And what we're seeing, just reporting, is that back a month or two ago, they were calling for a ceasefire. At least these protesters were calling for a ceasefire. But what has turned into calling for a ceasefire now has called to, and we've seen it, death to Jews. So it's turned from a ceasefire to now violence against Jewish people in America, against Israel. So that's the problem that a lot of Americans are seeing. And it's creating this divide. It's creating this divide on college campuses. It's creating this divide in corporate America. If you're Jewish, you're scared. And, you know, those who are pro giving money to Israel, like we just did, we gave some money for the package. So there's a lot going on.
So do you think then, based upon what you just said, because, you know, we've seen in terms of the arrests, we've seen professors being knocked to the ground. Are you saying then that America has got a problem in its universities with extremists? Is that what you're saying?
I do. Yeah. I mean, we saw it with Harvard, and even we're seeing it at Columbia. The president is not really taking any charge to end this. And again, I think they're concerned because they want to allow free speech. But what happens when it gets violence? People, you know, are arrested, but then they said they were supposed to be let go of the university, but they're not, and they don't need to worry about it. So I think that there's a major concern about what's happening in our universities, especially as we saw what happened at Harvard a couple of months ago. And it's trickling down. And a lot of people are saying, you know what, my kids don't need to go to these elite universities and pay $90,000. We'll have them go to a different college, or we'll have them go to trade school, because all of this money we're paying to see this. My daughter's going to college. She just decided yesterday where she's going. And I don't want to see this happen on her college campus. I don't want her to be involved in this.
Yeah, very, very, I think, troubling scenes, I think, in the universities. And obviously, I think a lot of people very worried about what's going on in the Middle East. Alison Maloney, thank you very much for joining me on the Freeman Report. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Okay. We're going to take a short break now, and then we're going to jump across the border to Canada. We're going to be talking about the Trudeau government and whether Trudeau is going to be able to scrape through to the election in October next year. Personally, I think he will go before then, but I'll be interested to see what my next guest thinks. So stay right where you are, right here on TNT.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
I want to eat apples and bananas. I need to eat apples and bananas. Why can't I eat apples and bananas?
Support the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks to help provide meals to those in need. Join us at feedingamerica.org.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Right, so on the Freeman Report, we've talked a lot about what is going on in Canada over the past year. I guess my first question to my next guest, she is Kat Canada, she's a political commentator, is Kat, do you think Justin Trudeau will make it through to the next election in October 2025?
The hopes of Canadians is that he takes a walk like his father did, but I'm afraid that he's going to hang on until the bitter end, because he's just that narcissistic and he loves what he's doing to Canada right now. So...
yeah, it's pretty shocking, isn't it? Because I don't know, I haven't sort of seen him in public that much recently, but not that long ago, every time he seemed to appear in public, he would have literally hundreds of people following him, shouting all sorts of obscenities at him. He seems to be really unpopular. How is he doing in the polls at the moment?
Okay, so that is still continuing. He cannot step foot outside without being chased by Canadians who are extremely angry at what he's doing to our country. He is absolutely tanking in the polls, and the hopes of Canadians is that it represents what will happen in the next election, because previously, yeah, where he has been down in the polls, he still managed to eke out a minority government for himself, even though it was the smallest minority on record. So he's still extremely unpopular. But as the polls project right now, the leader of the opposition, the conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, he is up by 100 plus seats. And the Liberals, which is what Trudeau leads, is the Liberal Party is losing the chance to actually form official opposition in the next election if the polls are accurate. It's, yeah, unprecedented.
And what is driving that fall in the polls? Obviously, those of us who follow things from a certain angle will point to the trucker protests, the jab mandates, the travel mandates with the vaccines, all of these types of things. But is that the reason that he's losing support in Canada, or are there other reasons?
Well, I would say the latest reason is how expensive everything has gotten after he rammed through the carbon tax for Canada. So that has obviously increased the price of fuel, food, because everything's obviously delivered. So I would say it's probably the cost of living, the nearly doubling of rental prices, the housing crisis. I would say it's a compoundment of issues that have absolutely destroyed his popularity in the poll. He's losing one of his major voting blocks, which is young people. He's losing Gen Z, which is a really good sign that hopefully he's on his way out in 2025.
Yeah, and what is going on also with those? Because, of course, the top court in Canada ruled that the use of emergency powers by the Canadian government, the Trudeau government, was unlawful. But the last time I had a guest on, it was clear that the government were going to appeal that. Is there any update on that and what's going on with that court case?
So I haven't paid too much attention to that, so I don't have exact details for you. You know, the minds of Canadians are sometimes a little bit short on memory. So, you know, that's not really the topic of conversation right now. I think right now it's more the cost of living that's driving people away from voting Liberal.
And what about immigration? Because, you know, when we look at other countries, the US, the UK, large parts of Europe, in Ireland, immigration seems to be a big, big issue for many people around the world because of these woke politicians that are essentially encouraging people to come. And I know Canada has got its own problems. How much of a factor do you think that will be in the election?
Oh, I believe it is a really important issue for Canadians right now as well, because our current levels of immigration are just absolutely unsustainable. We're having about from 500,000 to 1.5 million people coming in every single year. And as you can imagine, that will obviously put a huge stress on the housing market, on the rental market, and on our healthcare system, which is already buckling. So immigration is on people's minds front and center, and we are hoping that we can do something about it when the Liberals are out of power, because at these levels, it's just, we feel the pain. We feel, we see it, as I said, healthcare, housing, etc. It's causing serious issues.
Yeah. I mean, I think the list of things to, when you look at Canada, to worry about, there's a long list of them. Freedom, I think, for a lot of people is one of the big issues. I've already talked about the trucker protests. But tell us about this news. Apparently, there's a town in the Gulf of St. Lawrence in Canada now where you need a QR code to enter or to leave the area. What's all that about?
Yeah, so... It's crazy. It even applies to people who live in the town or the area. It's not just for tourists. So it's an extreme violation of the freedom of movement in our country. When I first heard the news, it really shocked me. You know, I thought we already, you know, gone through so much loss of freedom here, especially during the last 4 years. This liberal, or I should say illiberal, government has managed to ram through several censorship bills and now this. So I'm hoping that this is just another alarm bell for people to think about when they go to vote in 2025, because freedom is so important and this government is making sure that we're losing it bit by bit in every corner of our life.
What's the thinking? What's the justification behind this? What problem is the local authorities trying to solve?
You know, I'm not even certain. I think it has something to do with preserving environment. I'm not even sure what the thinking was behind that QR code, but I know the citizens are outraged because they live there and they need some sort of electronic pass to leave the place where they live. It's ridiculous.
And so how is this being policed as well? I'm intrigued to know. Is this just a case, it's more sort of written on paper, and if you just so happen to get stopped by the police, they can check? Or have you got roadblocks? I mean, how does this work?
I'm not sure if they've set up the roadblocks yet. I think they're talking about it. I'm not sure how it will be implemented, but you know, I wouldn't put it past them to do something as crazy as that, because, you know, during the last 4 years, we had vaccine passports. I was a second class citizen during the last four, well, not the last four, but, you know, during the pandemic. So, you know, I wouldn't put it past them to do something like roadblocks to basically come in and out. And this is just another warning sign for people who are trying to sound the alarm bells about those 15-minute cities where you can't leave your zone. Mm. It's very dystopian. People don't like it. People are starting to wake up that this government is extremely against freedom. And as I said, we're hoping that that will change in 2025.
And on the censorship front, in Europe, we've got the Digital Services Act. In the UK, we've got the Online Safety Bill. This seems to be a trend across Western governments at the moment. What is the Trudeau government been doing on the censorship front?
Well, he had several censorship bills already rammed through. One of them has prevented people accessing news articles on social media platforms, for example, Facebook and Instagram. You can no longer share news links, and people are having to use a VPN to access news outlets on those platforms. And the most recent bill that he's trying to ram through is the Online Harms Bill, which is just another monstrous bill of censorship. And of course, it's packaged nice and pretty, sounds really good. It's to protect kids online. But of course, it contains very sinister parts to it, where you could even be held, you know, liable for a hate speech crime that you might commit in the future. And the fines are ridiculous. $50,000 fines, $75,000 fines, possible imprisonment even, just for saying something the government doesn't approve of. It hasn't passed yet. It's in its first reading, but that's what we're facing right now.
Yeah, and I think I did read about that bill early on. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think there was a part of it which talked about getting bloggers and sort of citizen journalists having to register with the government. Is that still part of the bill?
I'm not certain about that part, but I do know that they have talked about government licensing journalists before. So I haven't read the bill like line by line completely all the way through, but I know that this government has talked about that. And so I'd have to get back to you on that one to let you know if it's not, but it's just, it's possible.
Yeah. Okay. Let's zoom out on the political situation in Canada at the moment. Obviously, there's quite a bit of time to go until that election, October 2025. The Conservatives are definitely doing well in the polls. What are the other parties? Because you've got Maxime Bernier with the People's Party of Canada. How is he doing at the moment in the polls?
Right. So the polls that I see, the mainstream ones, actually don't even mention the People's Party of Canada. It's unfortunate. Maxime stands for a lot of really good things. He can't seem to garner the support to even get a seat in his own riding. That's what happened the last time around. So he has some really great ideas, and he does espouse things like, you know, anti-mass immigration, pro-freedom. But unfortunately, he doesn't really have a real standing right now as a party in Canada. You know, I'm not sure what the future holds for the PPC, but right now it seems like Conservatives are poised to take a supermajority.
Yeah. And do you think the Conservatives are the answer for Canadians? Because I think there's quite a lot of question marks over the Conservatives, aren't there? Because they didn't really do a lot to stop the Trudeau government during the pandemic with all of its restrictions. There's also a lot of question marks over the trucker protests as well, and the fact that the Conservatives didn't stand up to the Trudeau government. What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree that they could have done a lot more during the mandates, the vaccine mandates, although they are kind of catching up to the fact that people really were disappointed that they weren't taking stronger stances on freedom during the last 4 years. So it's good to see that they're responding to the pressure from the public to be more pro-freedom. I hope that trend continues. You know, they're not as conservative as some Canadians would like. For example, we haven't heard too much from them about curbing mass immigration, although they do talk about, you know, foreign students possibly doing something about that, which causes housing issues, which is just a small part of it, I think. I think the immigration is a bigger issue. But pragmatically, I think people are just looking at the Conservative Party basically as anything's better than Trudeau at this point. And I don't know how much you know about, you know, the voting culture in Canada, but it's not as strong in terms of, if you compare us, for example, to the States. Canadians, you know, we do love freedom, and I'm personally extremely pro-freedom because I come from a communist country, so I'm quite, very conservative in a lot of regards. I think, you know, a lot of Canadians are just centrists, and so right now it's just Trudeau is completely illiberal. He's gone too far left. He, you know, he has his hands in every aspect of the lives of Canadians. Freedom is disappearing. So people just want him gone. And even if the Conservative Party isn't as conservative in all the areas that people would like them to be, they just see the Conservatives as an answer to this horrendous, illiberal, dystopian government that Trudeau is leading.
And what about on those vaccine mandates now? I know that COVID isn't on the horizon at the moment, but are the COVID jabs still being pushed in Canada? Is there any debate at all at a national level of the damage that they've caused at all?
Well, the Conservatives have finally caught on, and at every speech that the leader of the Conservatives, Pierre Poilievre, gives, he's, you know, bringing it home and saying, you know, we need to get rid of the mandates because they do still exist, believe it or not. In British Columbia, which is where I am, the healthcare staff are still subject to those mandates. I have several friends who cannot work as a nurse in British Columbia because they didn't want to submit to further boosters. So it's still in place, which is ridiculous. I don't see a whole lot of push for continued boosters, although there are obviously diehards who love the boosters for some reason. So they're still talking about them. But for the most part, we moved on. We just need to get the mandates repealed for the provinces that still have them in place.
Absolutely. I think they need to go. They should never have been there in the first place. I think a lot of Canadians see that. And let's just hope that Justin Trudeau, like Jacinda Ardern, goes soon, because I can't see him dragging on until October 2025. But then again, Kat, I look on a lot of the things going on in Canada with just amazement that all of this stuff is going on under Trudeau. But listen, thank you for joining me on the Freeman Report today. Kat, Canada, ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Right, so that's it for me today. But I'll be back to do it all again tomorrow. And in the meantime, we've got more fantastic shows right here on TNT.